the grade cricketer is a Twitter stream. It's about playing cricket at the grade level.
Boys!
Get a few today, did you?
To be honest with you, I hate grade cricket.
I went into to play for a team called... the name escaped me.
Obviously, sharing's always a big issue, for young kids coming into a senior cricket team.
Tiger was like a wit league.
A bit of advice for the player, yeah. Sort of one.
I refer to the great cricketer here and I'll say, this will do a little bit early.
You know, there used to be a time when Pez and I didn't live in the same cities, before people were eating spicy bats, before sandpaper was being rubbed on balls, before India and the Asian century had commenced. But here we are once again. And why are we in separate rooms? I think you already know the answer. But we'll tell you more in a second. This episode is brought to you by Budgie Smuggle. User code CHAMP at checkout. Steve O'Keefe is on the show. We're talking Devon Conway hundreds. We're talking Big Bash. We're talking spicy bat coughs. Pez, I'm sorry I can't touch you. I'm going to reach out and touch it. And you are an it. What's going on, brother?
Oh, man. I'm similarly sad. I mean, people don't know this, but when we do the show in studio, we actually are playing footsies under the table. And that I actually find that a comforting little trope, like a teddy bear, helps my brain work. But no, mate, we've succumbed. We've been struck down in capitals by the virus, and you know, there might be some speculation as to how that was acquired. You know, did you guys put yourself in the mixer for 48 hours with any manner of people? Were you sensible when you did so? I believe we were, but. Not enough. And here we are. But thankfully, we're able to soldier on. My symptoms are quite mild. I'm not sure about you, really. But, you know, we can still bring content that fits into the rubric of what one person on Reddit said was, you know, we're woke, we're toxic, we're the grade cricketer.
We like to bring people into the belly of the beast. We like to bring people into what real cricket is. And real cricket right now is that COVID's fucking everywhere here. There's COVID in camps. There's COVID outside of camps. There's just COVID everywhere.
I mean, if you don't have COVID,
yeah,
you know what, that's the question. You know,
yeah, you're a loser,
right? Do you hide under a rock, or maybe you just wear an N95 mask and good PPE?
It's cool to pee your pants. I feel like shit. But, you know, the show must go on. The show's going on, baby. We're making the people laugh. We're bringing some humor in. We're telling some stories. We're just telling stories. But which one of you coats wasn't in during Side Mouth that gave us COVID? Or which beer was it the following day?
Yeah, it could have been so many things. Someone was saying to me, it's a thing in like Australia, especially, you know, if you get COVID, there's still this stigma of like, well, you know, where'd you get it from? And there's sort of a guilt and a judgment. Yeah. I certainly feel dirty every time I've had to tell an ill-defined social contact, you know, like that they may have to get a rat that you actually can't get. You can't actually have high testing numbers if you can't get a test. That's a good one from the government. But yeah, you sort of feel like you're letting them know that you've got some sort of STD. Not that I've ever done that before. I just don't know if people have talked about that. But then, you know, in places like in the UK, it's sort of just a given. Like, you know, it's always really telling when you tell people you've got COVID. Like, nice people say, how are you feeling? And other people will be like, where'd you get that from? You know, like, they're going to fucking find patient zero. And we're at the MCG. But anyway. Yeah. God, there must be tens of thousands of people storming around with COVID regardless. Like the... The entire process, like now the coal face of it, of like working out if you've got it is just a joke. Like I couldn't get a test I went to 3 separate sites, all closed, 15 chemists called, no rats available.
No V-rats.
You know, it's... Yes. So, but you know, let the boy watch. The boy being coronavirus.
Okay, the Ashes. Do you remember when that series was going on, Pez? Remember the Ashes?
I think so.
Hey, mate, the fallout from the MCG, I think mostly because there's been a big gap between tests 3 and 4. That wasn't in the schedule. That was just how the game finished in the third test. But the fallout of that for England has just been like they're doing the fucking like branch review of everything, root and branch review, not just the branch. It's not just a bank review.
Or branch stacking.
Franchising banks. But
it's a very strange review just into kind of franchise structures with banks. nothing to do with cricket, but...
But I just thought it was interesting to talk about just in lieu of any cricket being played, except for the New Zealand Bangladesh series. But mate, like just they're talking about county cricket, they're talking about pitches. Kevin Peterson's talking about when he hit 355. That's when he realized against Leicestershire. That's when he realized that the cricket was no good. You know, everyone's got a viewpoint. They're trying to save English cricket. How are we going to save English cricket? Sort of forgetting there's two tests to go. I think there's almost next to no chance that Hobart test is going ahead. But, you know, if someone does want to buy my day five Hobart ticket, then, you know, hit the DMs. But mate, it is quite remarkable that like English cricket needs to change, but they still have to finish this series. And like these players are all in hotels. Silverwood can't go to Sydney. There's 9 people in the camp, I think, England camp, who have COVID. Net bowlers at the SCG or the MCG, at the SCG, found out that they were positive when they were at the Nets bowling. Mate, it's fucking, what is sport? What is love? Baby, don't hurt me. Don't hurt me no more.
Yeah. Like,
I feel like shit.
Yeah, like there's so many different ways to... Excuse me, I've just got to cough now. There are so many... I mean, a capitulation of this magnitude just offers, like, so many angles for interrogation. Like, I wrote something overnight that was just sort of, like, trying to unpopularly and quietly say, like, oh, Australia's been okay too. Mm. But it's more fun to pick at the carcass of English cricket. And it's not really for us to do, though it is funny. But, yeah, like, I've enjoyed the, I've enjoyed people like joining the dots between like the macro social, cultural and economic forces that lead to like Darren Stevens bowling to Manus Labuschagne, you know, like, and why that's the death of Test cricket, you know, like that's good. That's strong gear. Like the systemic stuff is the best. Like, I mean, these like, hammerings have been happening obviously for nearly 20 years now. You had 06, 07, you had 13, 14, 17, 18, and now 21, 22. And like 2010, 2011 just like stands alone as an absolute anomaly. It's kind of like, it's kind of like, you know, like the batter who like returns to the dressing room after scoring runs, you know, smug in the overall team defeat. Like I'm imagining the like the 10-11 guys turning up to like Ashes reunions.
Oh yeah.
You know, like with everyone else just going like just so gleefully just going, fuck's sake, boys. You know? Kevin Peterson, who was actually part of two other hammerings, tweeting about scoring 355 in the county championship with one pad. You know, that's when I knew it was a problem. It's all pretty good, mate.
it's pretty tough to beat. It's getting into some real Bradman areas. I'm not sure how just yet, but it's good, mate. One of the interesting conversations that I suppose if you're the captain of the ship and there's a ship now, it's just a big boat. That you're gonna have to answer some questions like the Costa Concordia. But Joe Root's captaincy being questioned is. I understand it to a degree. I'm not saying that Joe Root is the best captain that's ever captained England or any international team ever. Like I think he's the best guy for the job, and I think he's a decent captain, and you know he's the best player, and actually that best player, but it's not got nothing to do with it. He's just an experienced player. Seems to be doing a good job. There's more to it than just on the field, of course. I think he's led this England team as best he can from the front whilst playing. I think he's done lots of good things. The idea. That like, just get Stokes in. And then fucking all of a sudden the series is fucking even close to 4-1. I said this last week and I need to think about it more clearly, but because it also depends about, to your point about what you wrote on The Guardian the other day, or yesterday, or was that today, that Australia have been good. And I'm trying to think what they will be like in 4 years' time when next England come out here. But I think that the alarm bells that are ringing for England is that, like, this series is going to be 5-0 and probably has and probably was going to be for a little while. So what's it going to be like in 4 years' time when you think, really, this England team actually might be worse because all the best young players are already in the squad. There's no one else coming through. So can this patch of players that's in the squad now become guys who are, instead of averaging 27 and 32, can they start averaging 47, 43, 39? You know, I don't think so. It's already so hard to win enough in Australia. So it starts becoming an issue of, like, can this team even win a game in Australia in another 4 years' time? You know, and then India, you know, Pakistan, West Indies, New Zealand, you know, it's a huge issue with their white ball program. But I've let myself astray there on a tangent. But Joe Root to not be captain, and that is just going to answer it. I'm not even sure that's like 1% of the issue necessarily. But I mean, what do you sit on that?
Oh, well, really strong views, mate, about Root and captaincy. Yeah. I noted that like Mike Atherton, who's a figure of like deep respect,
he's pretty good.
Called for Stokes to become captain. I think he wrote a really long piece in the Times with his kind of blueprint for what needs to happen with English cricket. And the thing I took out of it was, I'm sure it's sensational, but I mean, I read it, but it was quite well written, you know, and very thoughtful, but like, I just saw a lot of names that were daddies, which I thought was a good way to look at it. Like, yeah, you know, Stokes, captain, daddy. Andrew Strauss, CEO, you know, dad flavor to that, a lot of dad stuff. And sometimes teams just need refreshing, Joe, you know, like the captain as best player, I think, has been disproven many, many times throughout cricket. I mean, even Garfield Sobers lost the captaincy, you know, Ricky Ponting lost the captaincy to Michael Clarke. I think the question for Stokes is, like, does he want to do it? I mean, he's so far said that he doesn't, but then a reluctant captain, that's hot shit too. You know? That's the great paradox. They're always the best politicians. You just want to be reluctant. You don't want it too much. So they obviously need a lot of change. They need some new people in there, and I like the dad prism for that. As for, like, what any... It's funny you make that point about where England going to be in 4 years. Is it sliding irreparably? And, like, I noted Johnny Liu wrote in The Guardian as well, altogether much better than anything I offered up. But I had to laugh because the headline, which he doesn't write, was, "Will England ever be good at Test cricket again?" And I like that. But you know, we haven't been able to get him on for this show, mainly because of time difference and us not being bothered to get up early. But just to paraphrase what he wrote, it was essentially like contrasting how Australia still affords respect to Test cricket, and you only have to look at, say, the performance of Scott Boland, who wouldn't have imagined this had happened for him at this time, but he's still able to arrive on the scene, perform the way he did, and that's Australia showing respect to Test cricket. Would England be able to do the same? But I think that there's this thing with the Ashes where it does provide this opiate for the home winning nation. And an opportunity. So we devote this like outsized meaning to the Ashes. Like this is in the context of like a four format global cricket world. I'm including the 100 within that. If you go T10, there's five formats where like how there's a child born every minute. There's like a game on every hour. And yet like with the Ashes, it's on every 2 years. And we essentially attach all of the success or meaning of the success of our country's cricket to it. All you have to do to look good in cricket then is just to perform respectably at home in the Ashes. Mm-hmm. So that's what's happening to Australia at the moment. We've got myriad systemic issues in Australian cricket, and they're going to be exposed when we go and play against better opposition. For now, we're just like intoxicated with fucking Cram Green bowling at 140s.
Yeah.
We knew this would happen.
How busy.
And it's England. I was thinking mischievously, like, instead of England carrying on about playing with the kookaburra and fucking around with county cricket, to get good when they're over here in 4 years' time, I think go the other way. Like, don't breed Space Jam bowlers for, like, arid desert cricket out here. Like, just throw every egg into, like, the basket of developing better mints for home and guys who can hoop it even further and, like, and play the ball down the line as a bat to try and smash us at Edgbaston in 18 months' time. Because when England does that in 18 months' time, which they could well do, then we're the one who's going to be having the root and branch review, you know, like a hurricane, you know, named after a hurricane. So I just think get really, really good at winning at home. Like, develop Darren Stevens even further, I think.
Yep.
And then, you know, you can worry about all that other shit later.
I agree. I think the Ashes should be played in February and March in England. That's the only times.
That's that, what they,
and all right. All the games should be north. I've done three tests in Durham. Just stitch us up. That's what it should be. Yeah,
exactly. Then your broadcast deal will be good. And then, you know, insiders in the cricket ecosystem can keep their jobs. Yep. And that's what it's all about, isn't it?
So they should have the fourth Ashes test should be at Old Trafford the same afternoon as Man United play. And then James Anderson's fucking running in from his end.
Exactly.
There's fucking flares going off. Warner's coming out to the crease. There's fucking knives being thrown in the field and darts.
Exactly. Like, forget, like, all this chat about, you know, why do our players come from private schools when 93% of kids are in state schools or in ethnic minorities? Like, don't worry about that. Like, literally tapping into kids who just don't even know about cricket and would prefer to know John Cena. Yeah. Like, I just think play in Feb, juice up those balls a much cheaper way of doing it.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you can nick Steve Smith off, the rest will follow.
Yeah.
England cricket's back, baby. We're all dumb. We're all internet brain people.
Yeah.
We're all dumb. Just beat us at home in 2 years, in 18 months' time.
Yeah.
You don't have to do your review.
Yeah. And play at least one game at Wembley. And by that, I don't mean like the football stadium. I mean like in the bowels of it where they play the darts.
In the arena. Yeah.
They should play one game in the O2, one in Wembley Arena, three at Durham, and one at Old Trafford. Okay. So it's a 7-test series. And one at Windsor Castle, just for, you know, whatever. Just because I like watching The Crown. Mate, I think it's just going back to, I mean, yeah, I completely take your point and I agree. Sometimes like teams just need a change of something on the training ground, a coach, a manager, maybe it is the captain, maybe it's just a change of personnel, refreshing, you know, who's in the squad, that sort of thing. And that can change, even though when you look at the names on the team sheet, they may look less than they look. Well, I suppose you make a team better than the sum of its parts. So I suppose that's the idea of any sporting organization. But I think like this, if Joe Root loses the captaincy because of the performance of this team, that would just show like how much this team has let him down, given everything that he's done just to fucking barely keep them competitive. That if he also lost the captaincy, it's like if Ben Stokes is the captain, and like I've got no idea if Ben Stokes is a good captain or not, he probably would be a good captain. Though saying that, like, do you really want to load up your best player, maybe your best player possibly in a generation, if he is a better cricketer than Joe Root, for instance, with like the responsibility of like captaining your test side as well, when like he's also just taken 6 months off for mental health, you know, issues and having the burden of the England captaincy. Look, he probably would do a good job, but like, I don't know, is that something you really want to do? You lose Joe Root as captain, but fundamentally, if Ben Stokes was the captain, would that mean that Ollie Robinson wasn't going to bowl offies that day, or like Jack Leach gets pumped at the Gabba? Like, does that actually? They've still got the same group of players. So whilst you make a good point, sometimes you do need a change and that will elevate their performances. This England team is so bad and their performances have been so bad. Fucking Jack Leach could be the captain and he's obviously a friend of the show, so that actually would be quite funny. So anyway, I don't know. But mate, you know, I suppose moving on to Australia, you mentioned Scott Boland before. I find that Scott Boland almost definitely won't play in Sydney. The interesting thing for me about Scott Boland, who is now like going to be celebrated... Mate, there's a world where Scott Boland not only doesn't play this MCG test, but he does play a test and he fucking shoots the lights out, right? But there's a world where he doesn't play any other tests. You know, it's just so unfair, like sport in general, I suppose, but cricket is so ruthless in this current batch of bowlers we've got. But this idea that Boland has come in and like the celebration of it a little bit is a, like, who the fuck's this bloke? You know, like, so there's two aspects to it. It's like, because we as the Australian public have never seen it, it's like, who's this guy who's just come from complete left field? And I know Chris Rogers has fucking trumped for him for ages, and George Bailey has spoken about they had his eye on him and all this stuff, and Ed Cowan's spoken well about him in the past as well. But if it was the other way, if it was like, I don't know, maybe if like if we're playing in England and Saqib Mahmood comes in for one test match, we've never seen him before, and he takes 6 for 7 against us, we'd be like, what the fuck is this? Like, we just would not be able to cop it. Even though both those bowlers are fucking really good bowlers. And Scott Boland that day was just, I was going to say untouchable, but all the batters were nicking it, so he was touchable, I guess. But I don't know. It's just some cerebral thoughts I've been having about Scott Boland, mate. What do you want to do with that?
Oh, mate, I'm still so, like, I'm so happy for Scott Boland for all those reasons that you say as yeah. well, you know, that like the nature of his success has driven a further stake into the heart of English cricket. You know, it's like, who the fuck is this bloke that's just gone and got 6 for 7 against us? Like it definitely piled on the humiliation. Now, harsh, because he's a good bowler.
Exactly.
He is, you know, and has been for a long time. And we omitted from our story last podcast that we were having beers and singing about or listening to people singing about having Scott Boland's towel, that we're actually having beers with Chris Rogers, who got in touch to say, why didn't you mention me? And I said, well, because I didn't think you'd want to be associated with us, to be honest, you know, but he was happy to be, and he was filming that and sending it to Scott. So, you know, therefore we played in Boxing Day. But yeah,
my first baggy green.
But, yeah, I mean, he, you know, it's, again, I just can't be happy for him in terms of, especially being an Indigenous man, getting the Johnny Muller medal. Dan Bredig's done a great piece on him visiting Johnny Muller's home. And, I mean, you know, a lot of people might roll their eyes at this, but they're, you know, the serendipity of all of that with him, as Johnny Lou says, landing at the MCG on Boxing Day to play against this English team at this particular time in their trajectory.
Fuck
to
yeah.
take 6 for 7. It is spiritual, you know, and I'm drinking all of that bad boy in. I think he could do a great job in Asia as well. He's here. It's really good. I mean, mate, like you got to hear on the agenda, like what's doing with the Australian team. Well, and that's how it's written. Like, I'm going through some of the sort of senior journos, like Malcolm Conn. There's a piece out from Malcolm Conn today again. Doesn't write the headline, but it's, we want 5-0. Lion calls for Ashes smash up, then world crown. You know, I'm like reading that, letting out a fucking Nutri-Grain roar, you know, and, you know, my wife's rushing in, asking if I'm okay. I'm like, yeah, Gary's just called for an Ashes smash up. You know, and I'm here for it. Talking in Twitter speak to her. She's left me.
Yeah. I've got a scarf on and waving a flag. I'm fucking etching a Southern Cross tattoo on my forearm. Fucking Ashes, we want an Ashes smash up.
Ashes smash up. Kind of like a fry up. You know? Yeah, I mean, the other things in conversation, I guess, man, is I don't know which way. Tell me where you want to start here. I mean, a bit of Langer stuff's popping up now. I suppose there's been a bit of a gap. Australia's won the series, so there's a lot of some developments, it seems, from journos on where things stand with that. And then the other one with the SCG is, yeah, like I think everyone's pretty sure that Khawaja's in for head. The other two are in the squad in case there's more COVID. And and does Swepson get a game? So you kick off wherever you want to go with that.
Yeah. So to catch people up, I'm sure they already know that Travis Head tested positive. I think he's still in Melbourne. Heady. Glenn McGrath's also got COVID, so unfortunately he won't be part of.
So he can't play.
So he can't play. Wouldn't be far away from a game, I got to say. So it's actually a shame because obviously the Jay McGrath test is pretty significant down the calendar. not just in cricket terms, but just culturally down here as well. And obviously Silverwood as well has the virus, so he is not travelling to the SCG. So, mate, I think Swepson probably is going to play. I think there's... I agree with you. I think Boland would do a good job in Asia. I think I can definitely see Boland taking poles with the Duke in a couple of years' time as well. So I think there's, I think we're in this point now where like Australia's having fucking practice games against a full strength England team, and they're getting some work into the legs of a few blokes. Picking Swepson for a Test debut in Asia, whether it be in Pakistan in a month's time or in India later in 2022. Is a daunting task, I'd imagine, for any spinner. It certainly was for me when I debuted in Sri Lanka in 1987.
We played a lot of tests, you and I. Yeah. See, we're part of it. Cricket's about us.
I remember facing Wickramasinghe. Just got to get forward to him. Don't know why his name came into my head, but hey, it's just the COVID fever. Seems the same up. So, mate, I like the idea of playing Swepson. Just to get some work into the legs. I think he's averaging 25 in Shield cricket. I think Lyon in the same period at Shield level is taking his wickets to 31 as an example of Swepson's good. he's not just like, I'm being facetious when I say just get a game into these blokes. Khawaja would come in, I think that's right. So I like the idea of Swepson, but I don't like the idea of playing Swepson instead of Lyon. I think it has to be with Lyon. So then what do you do with the rest of the team? I'm not sure. But I like the idea of giving him the game.
I just think one of the quicks misses out. I think that would be how they do it. I agree. I think Swepson needs to play. I mean, look, there are a lot of people who are rightly pointing out that the SCG for like at least 10 years, and including Nathan Lyon, so he's decently qualified.
Pretty good.
Isn't the deck... the spinning deck that it used to be. And I'm also kind of like, well, I'll fucking decide what deck it is because I just live in my own head. And if I want the SCG to be a turning deck and I want the War Brothers to be playing and I want it to be 98, 99 and my parents are together and Mark Waugh hits 100 and Steve Waugh 90 odd and McGill takes 12 for, then I'll fucking do that, okay? That's up to me. If I want...
All those things are... just whirled together in this whirlpool of what the SCG
and,
test
and
is.
And for that reason, Swepson needs to play. Yeah, I mean, like, they're on the rocks at the time. There's tears of a clown. But I think that, like, look, the SCG isn't Perth, and you're right. I think he's going to play in Asia, and I think they should get a game into him. And he also deserves it, and I think we should see how he goes. And if he has one bad game or one bad session, we should cast him aside for eternity. His entire life's work, dead.
That's right.
But, you know, good luck. Look, we've said this before. Yeah, spin up, Swepo. Trappings for the eyes, Swepo. It's a trapping selection. Mm. And, I said before, Mitch Marsh, Mitch Marsh, he's hitting them well.
I can see Mitch Marsh playing in Asia.
Yeah, I can too. I think I think Mitch Marsh has transcended something in his life. You can tell by the way he's playing cricket. I think he'd do a great job. But anyway, you say Marsh and there's a whole group of people who are going to be like, ooh. I mean, sure, Marsh did get a good go. But anyway, yeah, mate.
Hey, I think generally as well, like, Picking your best team at home is a different team to picking your best team away. And we all know that conditions are vastly different in Asia to what they are in Australia, as an example. And so, like, Swepson might not be in your best 11 here, or Mitch Marsh might not be. Cameron Green might be, in fact, is a better pick, in my opinion, in Australia. But I think Mitch Marsh actually might be a better pick in Asia in a test match. I can see more success, and so therefore, like, you have to have a group of players that can go. You have 25 international cricketers that can play in different conditions, because your 11 in Sydney is going to be different to your 11 in Ahmedabad. So why not get some work into the legs?
When we go to Sri Lanka, you know, England dusted Sri Lanka. That's how good they're going.
Yeah.
But but like, it will be an absolute Bunsen there. We'll need to pick like four spinners. That's what Sri Lanka would need to do to win the game with respect. And I encourage them to do so. It's going to be a different side. I think give Mitch Swepson a game. And can I talk about some Langer stuff some later developments. He goes.
Yeah.
So again, two senior journos, Malcolm Conn, Pete Lawler, have been writing probably other each on different sides of the ledger about the Langer stuff. Mm. Probably some different sources there as well. Yeah, the headline for Conn's recent piece was "Mutinous Players Will Have a Say in Justin Langer's Future." So that was the head of performance, Ben Oliver. It's pretty close with Justin Langer, I think, confirming that they're going to consult players about Langer's future. Mm. And that was an interesting one. Pete Lawler was an interesting one as well. I mean, he wrote in his most recent piece about Justin Langer that Langer seems to be a dead man walking. Mm. And he said it sensitively in that he was reading the room. He wasn't saying that his view is that Langer should be a dead man walking, quite the contrary. But he hasn't written like that before about Justin Langer. So dead man walking is a powerful phrase.
Yeah.
The question seems to be, you know, if they split the white and red ball coaches, will Langer get one of those gigs? That seems to be his best chance of staying in an Australian role, or will his time be up? And I think that Pat Cummins is going to have a pretty big say. I think one of the silent things that's happened since Pat Cummins assumed the captaincy is that he's wrested a lot more power back towards that position of captain, and he's star is so high at the moment. Mm. I think what Pat Cummins wants for the next 4 years, Pat Cummins will get.
Yeah.
So that's going to be an interesting political one for him.
Yeah. All right. Should we move on to the Big Bash?
It's all I want to do.
Six England players, Billings, Mamu, Topley, Garton, Mills and Vince, all sent home by January 7, which is the end of this week, isn't it? They're all ECB contracted players, obviously, ahead of their tour to the West Indies. So there's that, and that's because this is on the back of 10 positive COVID cases in the same Melbourne Stars setup, which led to a whole bunch of grade cricketers being drafted into the Melbourne Stars to fulfill their games. And the good thing about that is for them is that the Big Bash regulations say that you can't actually contract players through finances. You can't pay them unless you contract them before December 31. This obviously happened after that. And so these clubbies are now playing the Big Bash for free, which is a great thrill for them, I'm sure. And there's also some gear about, just in terms of adding to some more fast to it, though, safety important. If the Stars players were going to carpool to the game, I think it was at the MCG, wasn't it, this game in particular? Was this last night? Two nights ago?
No, I don't know.
If they were going to carpool to the game, the windows had to be down. So there's that. That's what's happening in the Big Bash.
one of the guys who looked quite good was Tom Rogers, mate. And and this is against the Scorchers, who are flying high, towards or at the top of the table. They look really good, actually. Scorchies. Tom Rogers has made six grade hundreds in his last 20 hits for Ringwood, and one of them was a double. And
that was in twos.
He looked right at home. He looked right at home in his first BBL game at 24 hours notice.
Yeah.
And, I think it's a universal truism that if you can dominate the level below, you're going to be a good shot at being able to do well in the level above. But there are a lot of people in cricket still who kind of get identified early. They don't have the performances on the board.
Yeah.
And then they just get fast-tracked to the top and they struggle for a while. Now, granted, Tom Rogers has more grade centuries than Travis Head, and Travis Head can play at the top level. But, that's more grade hundreds this year, I think, than Travis Head in his entire career.
So he's got, Tom Rogers has got 600s this year.
Yeah, in his last 20 hits, I think. So,
fucking hell, how's he seeing him?
Two seasons. Man, he's seen him well. I think that's a good story. That's an interesting one structurally. But yeah, obviously, obviously, yeah, you get a couple of clubbies in and everyone can start talking about clubbies and it's at Junction Oval and all that kind of stuff.
That's right. That's right. Welcome to the grade cricketer. Now, last
the
time
clubbies cricketer.
Last time we spoke, Ben McDermott hit back-to-back hundreds. Did he do his second one? Yeah, I think he did his second one. Then he got a duck in his third game. So life comes at you fast. At the moment, the Scorchies are leading the tournament. They're ahead of the Sixers. And then there's a Thunder. I think it's Hobart, a fourth. And then it drops away. I think it's the Heat. I don't have it in front of me. I think it's the Heat of the fifth. But I think there's probably three teams that can do it. Sixers are going for the three-peat. Sorry, three-peat. Scorchies look like the team to beat. And the Thunder. I'll have a look at the Thunder. Ollie Davies is doing some stuff. Sanger.
Mate.
Have a look.
So Cowan tweeted last night, like, there's no coincidence that a lot of the young guys, Ollie Davies, Jason Sanger, Matthew Gilkes, are starting to really look the goods because they're under the tutelage of Trevor Bayliss.
Yeah.
And they are, Sanger especially, you know, a bit of an it boy in New South Wales cricket. Is that the right phrase? Don't
friend
know.
Of the show.
A few years ago, friend of the show, real lean patch, and now starting to boss it. And his leggies are looking good too. Ollie Davies played an unbelievable shot off Rashid Khan.
Yeah.
Rashid Khan bowled, it was either a leg spinner sliding into him or a wrong'un. He's gone off he's hit him for six over cover off the back foot.
Mm.
Sorry to sound like X's and O's nerdy there, but it was an unbelievable shot.
And it was on
Matthew
leg stumps.
Is great to watch as well. Yeah. Coming in, yeah. Incredible. Mohammad Hasnain, 3 for none off his first over in BBL cricket, bowling rockets, 145k. So I like the Thunder of fun, and obviously they've got Bilbo, but he has to go home now. I want Bilbo to play in the Sydney Test. I don't know how it's going to happen. Need someone to get COVID, but I just want to see it. Yeah. I want Rig, I want the blonde stuff, and I just feel like he'd do well, probably because I know him, but he's a strong character. Scorchies, he goes, so they look hot.
Yeah.
Friend of the show, Pete Hasseglu, knocked over Maxi yesterday at the Junction Oval. Classic Hasseglu delivery. And I just had to text Maxwell and say, mate, you don't really want to, like, you sort of go square against Hasseglu at your peril. So I sort of gave him some footage. You got to hit him down the ground.
Yeah.
Left on red and sort of, I sort of think I was blocked actually, but, anyway, Scorchies are good. I'm glad to see Hasseglu doing well too.
Did you see in that Stars and Scorchies game last night? Who was batting? Was it Bancroft was on strike? No, it wasn't Bancroft. When Bruce Oxman,
I watched every ball, mate. So yeah, whatever you're about to say, I definitely saw it.
Changed his decision, caught off the helmet. Oxman gave an out. Then he was like, "Oh no, that actually wasn't out. That was Ashton Turner. Ashton Turner was the batting."
All right,
bumper, and then it was just like, well. What about this, guys? What do we think about this? It's like, well, he made the right decision. So, like, what are we... Nah, but this was different, though. What do we make of this?
Man, that up.
Yeah.
Run a couple of ads at the front of that clip, a couple of fucking provocative words, you got yourself a business.
That's right.
That's a business model, baby. What would you call that, you know? Howler from Oxenford overturning decision trolled hilariously... You know, McDonald's ad, something else. Boom. Clicks.
Bruce Oxen sucks at umpiring.
There you go. Fuck.
As a meme.
That's high level. Mate, that's ads.
South Africa, India. As we're doing dailies, obviously, for the South Africa-India series. The first test match wrapped up the other day in Centurion, India 1. You can find the dailies on YouTube, or if you just listen to the audio, patreon.com/greatcricketer after every day's play. The second test actually starts tonight. I don't know what day of the week it is, but it's tonight. And that is in Joburg. It's at the Boring. So there's that. Now, when we were talking about this the other day on our Daily Pez after day five, Quinton de Kock announced his retirement from red ball cricket for South Africa. He's 29 years old. Pretty shocking revelation. I don't think anyone saw this coming. Least of all, Dean Elgar, the captain of South Africa, who said that he was pretty shocked. And apparently he was quite upset. And I reckon he probably was upset because he's basically got one or two decent players in that team. And that guy used to be one of them. Mate, it's alarm bells are ringing for South African cricket because there's fair to say there's been a bit going on there for a little while. I've lost heaps of players, not just at the end of their careers, but also Colpack stuff. You know, there's obviously controversy through Quinton de Kock, least of all during the World Cup with the Black Lives Matter and the taking of the knee or the lack thereof. And also they're just in a rebuilding phase and they're playing against a super strong Indian team, obviously, who are trying to find, who are themselves trying to get their first away win in South Africa ever in their history, which is pretty cool. So this is not good for South Africa. You can see them being weak for a while. But why do I feel like they'd give us a game next summer when they come out here? Because they probably will.
Yeah, that's Springfield Shelbyville stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, are they in a rebuilding phase? Like, it feels to me like that, like de Kock's retirement is, I mean, this, that'd be far more alarming than whatever's going on in England, you know? That's a guy who just averages 40, like, okay, 38, let's round that up.
Yeah.
Just, and he's got good, like, economic and probably moral reasons, you know, for doing so. It'd be a complete shit fight trying to be a test cricketer in South Africa when you've got the opportunities that someone like Quinton de Kock has got. That's another thing Jonathan Liu was writing about, just like with the West Indies, you know, at the turn of the century, they had Brian Lara and they had Ambrose and Walsh, and Johnny was comparing that to Root and Broad and Anderson. And, you know, the West Indies have morphed into a country that has consistently produced sizzling white ball players.
Yeah.
And its test cricket is an afterthought compared to that. They're my words. You know, is that going to happen with South Africa as well? Is that actually going to happen with a lot of countries apart from India? And can Australia and England go with them? You know, I'm really saddened by de Kock's retirement on a test, like just from a test cricket perspective, but I totally understand the forces that drive it for him. I think it's really worrying. India in this series, they were very, I can't remember if we talked about this on our last cast, but they were very clinical. I think we did. They were clinical. Rahul Dravid's a coach. They've got players, you know, for days. They're like Chelsea in 05. They had three players for every position funded by Roman Abramovich, you know? Mm. So United got Carrick, and then so that just linked a few things up. But India should go on to sweep this series too, I think.
I think that the conversation about de Kock's retirement is just one small piece in like a jigsaw of like what tests cricket and what cricket is. I mean, I said this on the Daily Show that I think this is a... This is a signifier of... Oh, no, so we're in the middle of seeing the de-evolution of test cricket generally. Like, if three countries are going to hoard all the money for cricket, obviously India, England and Australia, then this is going to be part of the problem, because then all the guys like in the West Indies or Bangladesh or Pakistan or New Zealand even, who are as good as other players in those three countries but can't get the same resources financially speaking, then why would they go and play test cricket when they can fund their entire livelihoods and the 5 to 15 other people that are surrounded by them, with either by family or their business partners or, you know, their manager or whatever. They have to look after all them through their playing fees that they earn. This is going to be part of that. I also heard Firdaus Moondar, friend of the show, talk about Quinton and saying that he's a guy who likes to do a lot of like trail running, hiking, sort of fishing, that sort of... He's an outdoors guy, and I think that...
Like me.
That's right. A real woodsman.
You know me. That's old Sam Woodsman Perry.
Whereas Pezza, he's out the back having a chop, just chopping wood. Just chopping wood.
Workbench, eh?
Yeah, on the old workbench there. Wow, okay, some real side mouth stuff there.
Yeah.
But he's a guy who's just been in bubbles a lot the last couple of years. And it's an interesting point when you think about that with England as well, who have been in bubbles for 2 years. I'm not really sure what percentage you can attribute to England's failure to fucking bowl a ball behind the front line because they've been in bubbles. But you can't argue that the impact that would have mentally on a person, you know, Quinton de Kock's just about his first child. He's spoken about wanting having a big family and wants to do that very quickly. He's 29, 54 tests. I've kind of done my job. I want to play in the IPL. I want to do a bit of franchise stuff. I'm going to earn my money. Like, that's what cricket's going to become. Why New Zealand, who we'll speak about in a second, the best test team in the world, continue to get Bangladesh every fucking 2 years and not get any big series? This is not fair, because there's no money in it for the ICC and and whatever. So they're all going to play franchise cricket. That's just the way it's going. And we're in the middle of seeing great players. Quinton de Kock, statistically, is one of South Africa's best ever cricketers. And as a gloveman, I think he ranks as like the, he has the eighth highest average ever of any wicketkeeper ever. Pretty good. And he's cutting his career short when he could have played more than 100 caps, which is fucking pretty amazing. Again, because South Africa don't play as many tests as the other big three nations. So,
man, I think this is
how it all ends.
Like, at the same age, Gilchrist had played 10 tests.
Right.
Just another one on the South Africa-India series. Like, I think South African crowds, of which there are none due to SARS-CoV-2, like, they're underrated, you know? Like, so having no crowds is like, normally we think of crowds, we think of MCG or fucking India, you know, the darts. Shit like that. Or you know, the darts, yeah, that's right. Crowded house. But like, you know, there's nothing like a big South African man, tanned, meat-eating, drinking his castle lager.
Having a bride.
Absolutely giving it to you. But they don't have that, you know, they don't have that man, that one man at the ground. And really, you can't discount that. Well, he really is, you know, like he's coming up against a country of 1.6 billion people with some pretty good systems and stuff. But, you know, the power of that man with his braai and his tan and his castle lager cannot be underestimated. That's a powerful man.
And you don't have him. They should try and get him. That he is saying the most heinous shit possible, but that gets in the opposition players' heads and they don't perform as well.
He may or may not, you know, like, I don't know. I just know that when I see the camera, I haven't been there. When the camera's on him, it looks scary, you know?
Yeah. And you can't underestimate when the South African cameras just pan to the crowd, their ability to find very attractive women in the crowd. That's just one of their broadcaster's main MOs when they go there, you know, and I miss that. There's some more India Kohli captaincy stuff. I'm not sure how much we're still interested in this, but Chetan Sharma, the selector, said that everyone in the meeting asked Virat to reconsider stepping down as T20I captain. Ooh, what does that mean? I don't know. I don't really care. He's not captain anymore. ODI squad. Has been announced for India. They play three ODIs against South Africa. Rohit Sharma, who is the new captain replacing Virat Kohli, is injured. So he won't be doing it because he hasn't recovered from a string. So he's not flown out to South Africa. So instead, KL Rahul is the captain. And then Jasprit Bumrah, he gets the VC. So KL Rahul gets the armband.
Oh, man. Oh, God, I don't know about you, but I'm absolutely mouth-watering clash between India and South Africa in white ball cricket. Definitely remember what happened. I'm going to fucking savour this series.
Yeah.
I'm going to remember everything about it.
Mate, who's going to bowl the middle overs?
The future. God, mate, that's the matchup I've been waiting for. The middle overs of that that game. No, hey, well done, KL Rahul. He's really coming good in cricket, you know.
That's right. He's coming good in cricket. New Zealand Bangladesh Pez is a game that is happening right now. Is there any point in me even reading out the score? Because I don't have it in front of me, so it'd be good if you say no.
No, and it's going to be have changed anyway. Listen to it.
Yeah, I've just got personal interest in this, in what's happening in this game. Anyway, Devin Conway hit a century in the first innings. New Zealand got 308, I think it was, in the first innings. 328. And as I'm reading this, Bangladesh are 256 for four. Which makes it a lot. In fact, Bangladesh are ahead in this game, which is amazing because Bangladesh are a bit of a rabble by all reports coming into this game. They're only 72 runs behind with 6 wickets in the bank in the first innings. But Devin Conway batting at 3 in this game. He's obviously opened the batting in the past. But I saw a stat the other day. And when I say the other day, I mean this morning, that Devin Conway with his 122 in the first dig becomes the sixth batter ever to score 100 in their first game at home, in their first game away. And the last two people to do that were in 2004, Michael Clarke and Strousey. So that's pretty amazing. I mean, Conway's just come in. Like, he's got a good white ball record, but fuck, he's done the business, mate.
No, he can play, and I'll be the judge of that. Mm. And was he overlooked by South Africa, Devin Conway?
Well, he's born there,
wasn't
he?
That hurts. Bangladesh compiling a total here. I mean, really, like, that's a boil over in the making. I mean, that's the Tigers taking it to the greatest test playing nation on their home track.
Yeah.
That's, mate, my eyes will be glued to that once this show's finished.
Something India never glued. Did.
Painted on.
Mate, your eyes are painted on. That's not the same thing. Okay.
Anything else he goes, or should we be thanking Budgie?
Let's thank Budgie, mate. Our sound guy for Channel 7.
There's no way he listens to this show, but he'd be really funny if he was on it. G'day, Budgie. No, I'm talking about Budgie Smuggler. He goes, again, in the apparel wear, in the swimwear game, making this show tick, making it happen. Australian made. I want to talk today, he goes, I want to pick up on what we were just talking about. I want to pick up on successful, heroic, impressive South Africans who have played for other nations. Yeah, if you want to have a custom design swimwear and you want to include just the sort of the stereotypical big meat-eating, braai-eating, castle lager-drinking man, you can do that. Yep. But also consider guys like Devin Conway, you know, Manus Labuschagne, which is how it should be said, Andrew Strauss, Kevin Peterson. Yep. I didn't know the other day, this has to be right, but Alan Lamb.
Oh, yeah, that's
had
right.
Had a South African accent. Lammy.
Oh, was he?
Hope he's well, Lammy, actually. Yeah.
Was that Zimbabwean?
Oh, it could well be. And you know what? Hey, let me apologize for another mistake I made when I said that Ross Taylor was Maori, and I've been corrected on that before. He's not Samoan. I'm an idiot. Needs to do research. Let me just go. He goes,
I just had a feeling it...
You think you could be right.
I've just got Godfather Alan Lamb gets goosebumps. Wish Kevin Curran, something else. Hang on.
Yeah, well, that confirms it.
Yeah. Something about Alan Lamb's Zimbabwe. I feel like there's something in my memory.
Yeah, it does for me too, now that you say that.
Okay.
Unhelpfully, not before. Anyway, anything else in South Africa you'd like to celebrate, he goes?
Beautiful mountains. Beautiful mountains. Yeah, Nick Compton. Beautiful mountains. You know what?
Nick Compton and beautiful mountains.
Alan Lamb is a South African-born former English cricketer.
Apologies.
But was Rhodesia involved somewhere?
All right. I don't know.
Oh, no. It says he had a Rhodesian ridgeback. Sorry.
Not to be confused with a Kookaburra ridgeback. Anyway, you can get swimwear, apparel, and more at budgiesmuggler.com. Use the code CHAMP at checkout for a little surprise there, a little gift, a little bit of assistance on the overall pricing there in some way, shape, or form. Oh, yeah, mate. I remember the first year my parents took me out to watch the cricket. It was sort of 92, 93, and... South Africa was out here and Kepler was the opening bat and captain. And my parents telling me that he used to play for Australia. And that blew my mind. I did not understand anything about that.
Mm. David Pocock was born in Zimbabwe.
Yeah. Now he could play.
Talk about a rig.
We never minded an open side breakaway, an open side flanker, Australia. Yeah. Anyway.
We just wanted thick thighs. Thick thighs and nice guys.
Budgiesmuggler.com. Just in case you missed that, that's budgiesmuggler.com. The interview, he goes, is brought to you by T20 Stars. This is the gear that Watto has had his mitts all over. Yeah. Anytime you get it, Shane Watson's touched it.
Yeah, but he sanitized his hands. He's got hand sanitizer everywhere, which is a separate business of his.
Yeah. Wouldn't be surprised. Very entrepreneurial man. I mentioned Peter Hasiglu before. That was all using T20 Stars kit. It went extremely well. The four balls that I showed on camera, very successful for me. And it was just a very short net. But T20 Stars, all sorts of cricket kit that you want. Huge range. Watto is very close to it all. And I miss Shane Watson in public life, actually. I would like to have heard him on commentary. This summer, his commentary was a standout in the T20 World Cup, and it is in the IPL as well. But I'm sure we'll hear him in the summer soon. Well, What's that got to do with his?
I told you last week that I was getting fed T20 Stars adverts on my Insta. Are you saying that? Does that count as public life?
No, that's not in the algorithm.
Not in your algorithm. Okay. Well, it's just popping up on me. I'm getting
the algorithms. That's interesting. The algorithm's saying you should be back playing cricket.
Yeah, which is quite alarming. But maybe it's because of the amount of shadow batting I'm using. Because I've got the stick at home, as you know, just doing a lot of front foot pressing. Actually, you posted something the other day about Joe Root shadow nicking off.
Oh yeah,
I do that a lot. Yeah. I can feel the nick when I'm going forward when I'm shadow batting. Mm.
Yeah. And
if you want a good edge, T20 Stars.
I thought before when you said, shadow batting music, and I was like, what music are you setting that to? Shadow batting music. I was listening to some classical. I think classical music.
Yeah.
And you sort of do it in slow motion.
Maybe death metal.
Yeah, that's a good point. Use the code TGC10. That's TGC10 on your T20 Stars kit to get a little bit of a discount there as well. That's at t20stars.com.
Here he is, the great man, Steve O'Keefe.
Chill the fuck out, shut the fuck up. Chill the fuck out, shut the fuck up. Chill the fuck out, shut the fuck up. Shut the fuck up.
The team shit.
Omicron needed now. Void the series. Bring the boys home. Omicron needed. Bring the boys. Void the series. Omicron needed now. Bring the boys home. Omicron needed now. Omicron needed now.
Fuck
the series. Bring the boys home. Omicron needed.
Shut the fuck up.
Omicron needed now. Void the series. Bring the boys home.
Fuck
the series. Omicron needed now.
And it's fucked. The team shit. They can't catch. There's no first innings run still. And they're all injured. Thoughts?
Well, it's been a hot minute since we caught up with Sock, who always tells us how it really is. And those who, you know, listen to the show know that we're probably the foremost source for information on the BBL, watching most balls, pretty much every ball, bar a couple. But we thought we'd sort of get inside the BBL. So I want to start, Sock, with the BBL. Seems like absolute carnage and mayhem. Everyone is playing a squid game with coronavirus, and somehow it's still going. What can you tell us about what's happening inside, like, the BBL with SARS-CoV-2?
Mate, it's a nightmare, to be honest. It looks like, I honestly feel like I'm running a little small pharmacy here. I'll show you, this is my little kit pack. We've got a rapid antigen test. I'm running a little pharmacy out of here, and that's just to get out of bed in the morning to play.
Be very careful what you're showing there.
Yeah. So, mate, it is. We had a meeting this morning, actually. We're in lockdown again. Because of those damn bloody Melbourne Stars all getting COVID down there in Melbourne, just super spreading events, you know, cricket matches. And so, yeah, our pain is your pleasure, though. You know, we'll keep fighting on for the viewers over summer. So you've got something to watch and talk about.
Is that how you feel? You know, and is that how you felt your whole career, that you're basically just like a dancing monkey for consumer pleasure so that we can sort of crowbar a few ads in around you so execs can make money?
I was out there the other day and I was just staring up as a game, last game we had at the SCG, just looking into the stands, just like, what am I doing? What am I doing out here? You know, my body hurts. Every part of my body hurts. My brain hurts. I'm taking half a pharmacy, as I just showed you, just to get up in the morning and get out of bed. I'm like, why am I doing this? And the real answer is cash. I need the money. I had some significant significant gambling losses during COVID lockdown, and I need it. So I need to keep playing.
You got four for as well, though, didn't you? That's what you're going to say.
Yeah, I did. Yeah, I'm paying me by the wickets. And you blokes are on fire. 100K followers on YouTube. That's gold. Killing it.
Yeah,
you're gonna start handing out a bit of that cash to some of your guests, or we're still doing this for the love of it? It's about time.
Yeah,
swings and roundabouts.
Yeah, that's awkward.
Forget it. I'm right.
Hey, Sock, with the Melbourne Stars, like just the entire team now being mostly twos, threes, like what's the chat amongst the BBL sort of cohort? Like, are people looking forward to getting a game against the Stars now when they're playing against great cricketers? We thought
that round one, we thought, is this the CA 11 when we had a mate for 8 for 50? We thought this is where the CA have put another team in of the young blokes that they just want to build up scar tissue on so they never recover from it. it was a great team, that team. They've still got a pretty good team, mate. Justin Avendano was in our squad last year. So they were right in it up until the last sort of 5 or 6 overs. So as Shippy says, we have a healthy respect for each team, and you know, whatever they put on the paddock would be pretty good under D-Hus, I reckon. Yeah.
So are you guys basically like in full lockdown now, because obviously there's COVID just running through the country, especially down here in Melbourne, but are you guys like just locked down until the final?
Yep. We got some stuff through last night on some protocols, and it's basically essentially the same as last year. You can't leave your room, can't leave the floor in your hotel unless it's for essential services. You can go to training and back. And look, we've had three weeks of good fun. We're looking forward to a night at the Burley Pav up here on the Goldie. The boys were hanging out for it, but that's done and dusted. My missus is up here. I was looking forward to see her. She's got COVID, so I can't see her. So it's back to the pits and depths of your own mental sanity. You know, bowling those 24 balls in your head against Maxwell on a postage stamp, it wakes me up every night thinking about it. But, you know, we go on 3 more weeks, just get on with it.
Mate, what is the status with you and your body and your injury? How are you feeling? You know, when are we going to wake up and just see again, you know, SOK 2 for 13, SOK 3 for whatever?
Yeah, it's the body is just not, everything just hurts this year. Like I was getting, he goes, you'd be proud of me. I was lifting, you know, dumbbells from the bottom rack. You know, you've got a healthy respect for the gym. I can see that in some of your beautiful Instagram posts. That is a fine rig, my friend. So I was flying, and then the second lockdown hit. Yeah. The second lockdown hit in, and Roscoe, our S&C, just gave me 2 5-kilo dumbbells and said, look, just do your best. And I was down in the gym, down in my car park doing some gym work. And again, I was like, what am I doing? Why am I doing this? So I went back up, worked back on my wine diary, and the body's hurt pretty much ever since. I put on about 6 kgs, and I am not in a good way, I can tell you. So I'll be battling to get through, I reckon, this year. I'm fit to go for the next game, but as I said, the body is just hurting and I'm pretty much over it. But, you know, I'll hang on so I can say in a one-liner that we got a three-peat happening.
Mm. Yeah, I was going to ask you guys about the three-peat, especially you, Pez. I was going to ask you about the three-peat, Pez. About the three-peat, I mean, how is it? I mean, it's in touching distance. You guys are second at the moment. Obviously, the Scorchers are doing well. Thunder's okay, but there's a bit of a drop-off between Hobart and sort of Brisbane and the rest and whatever. But, I mean, the three-peat's on. You guys are in the mix, at least.
Yeah, we're right up there. I think, we lose Vinny, and I think a couple of teams lose their internationals. So we'll have to do some shuffling around. But, I mean, last year we didn't have Moses and Sabah Dorsch for a big part of the tournament. We seemed to find a way. So I'd like to think that, Ashton Agar said it in the World Cup squad, you know, you win with the squad, which you definitely do. And we've got a pretty good one here at the Sixers. Curry's sort of found his niche now, bowling and batting in the middle. And, you know, we won 8 down the other night with guys like Dorsch and Sabre who were batting 8 and 9. It could easily bat, say, 6 and 7 in other teams. So we've got plenty of depth. It's on, but, I mean, you need a lot of luck to go your way in this tournament. So, but, yeah, we're flying all right.
Sox, speaking of depth, what have you made of the Ashes? You know, like, I know a couple of the England boys have played grade cricket out here in Sydney. Zach Crawley, Ollie Pope and Ollie Robinson, you know, what have you made of their performances and what grade would you start them in if they had another season?
Yeah, clearly it's worked, doesn't it? First grade comment, come out, they're getting pummeled. Well, I'm glad you rang the SCG specialist just before the SCG test and asked me my opinion on that, which is gold. Only the 1 5-par, did you know, Pez, at the SCG in about 40 really? Games. I was rubbish. Yeah, I just came in on the back of all the quicks. But yeah, we've got Tommy Lamonby who played for the Hurricanes. So we've got a couple of Poms at our club. What do I make of the Poms? They're just rubbish, flat out rubbish, aren't they? I can't see them doing much better than what they've done in the last 3 games. And people think you can improve, but I also think you can get worse. And I think it might get worse. at the SCG. So I'm not very bullish on the Poms at all.
Hey, they're talking about Swepo getting a game. I presume with Nathan Lyon, so a couple of spinners. You only took one bag there in 40 games, but like the SCG wicket has been, whisper it quietly, Sock, like the worst wicket in Australia for a minute. Like it doesn't spin anymore. Like do we hold any hope for a good one this year, 2022?
I reckon we do. The last Shield game I saw there was I was watching. It was only went for 3 days. It was probably the best cricket wicket I saw. It spun from day one, had a bit of seam. Both teams sort of got their way to 200. And then on the last day, which was day three, Tanvi Sanger come on and bowled leg spin for the Blues. And it looked like it was spinning. There were some footholds, a bit of uneven bounce. So I reckon the wicket is primed to go for two spinners. I would pick Swepo in the team, bring him into a winning team. A bit cheekish about the Poms, but I actually think they'll fight back and they're a good side. But I reckon get him into a team that's winning, and then you prepare him for those subcontinental tours that are coming up. So he's going to have to debut over in Dubai like I did against Misbah Al-Haq and Yunus Khan, who just sweep you for days and you're none for 200, and again looking into the stands going, why am I out here doing this? So get him in, experience the winning feeling. He's been around that squad for ages now, and I think now's his chance. What do you do in the middle? Maybe you could bring Mitch Marsh in at six for the opening, for the batting spot. So you've got a bit more bowling and batting. So yeah, I think there's a few combos I could go with.
You're just noting a couple of tours to Asia coming up, Sock. There was a guy who played for Australia a couple of years ago, took 12 for 70 in India. Spinners peak late. And I know you're going to say, yeah, look, Swepson, Agar, Matt Kuhneman, really good players, deserve a shot. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to ask you, if Tony Dodder made, if Dodders, who I've never met, or Bales, or, say JL's still in the mix, they called upon you, would you answer the call for your nation? For a tour of Asia, given that you actually can bowl there?
It's a good question. I'm glad you asked that. I mean, the thing is, I get pretty blind, and I'm still messaging Cracker at 2 a.m. in the morning, like, mate, you've got to get me on these tours. He's like, mate, I'm not the head selector anymore. You're barking up the wrong tree. So if anyone's got Dodder's number, I'll do it for him. I'll ring him and tell him how good I am. On a serious note, we do have some good spinners coming through, like you've just mentioned. And there's no need for a Sock in the team anymore. I've had my time, Sam. But there's still hope. There's still hope. COVID. COVID through the Ashes squad and Aussie team call in the year of the scab. You've seen that ESPN doco. I'm happy. I'll stand up, I'll play, I'll do it for nothing.
You've done it before. And a lot of those guys, your Coleys, etc., would be carrying mental scars of have you demons. Clean bowling him, etc. as well. There'd be some demon stuff there, wouldn't there?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, the most demons I get out of that trip was, I think, the third test. I think it was 79 overs in an innings, and just could not get one off the straight, and could not beat the bat. And I was like, nah, this is it. You can have this. I'm done. So I quit on that tour on the third test, and we still had one to go. And I'm like, I'm done. I'm tapping out, boys. Yeah, that's where we'll leave that one. But no more India, no more traveling. I'll just tell everyone, I'll dine out on it, ring you blokes once a month, and you can keep bringing up my 12 for 70. I appreciate it.
There is something about left-arm spinners in India especially. I mean, we saw what you did over there in that tour. We saw Axar Patel has done amazing things for India in the last year or so, and then Ajaz Patel for New Zealand taking 10 for. I mean, so I guess my question is, how many tests would you have played if you were Kiwi?
That's a good question. 10 for in a losing game. I mean, that's the goal. That's the you're getting the photos and the selfies, and your team's just beat. That's a great cricketer, that, isn't it? You're celebrating. I mean, what's Axar Patel's numbers are just ridiculous, isn't it? Like, he's got 50 wickets at 10 or something at the moment. And there's just a queue, and then you've got Jadeja, and they've still got probably two or three behind those blokes. So he's just going to, and you know what you're going to get when you go over there and play them as well. It's going to be these dust bowl, tip wickets, which are just almost impossible to play on. So it's going to be tough. But we haven't seen Manus over there yet, have we? And I think the key will be the batting. You've got to put runs on the board, and I think we've got some good players to spin. Davey Warner seems to be better each time he goes over there. So again, I'm bullish. I'm bullish on the Aussies going over there. Mm. Hence why we need to get swept by into this test.
And I love that we're still two tests away from completing the Ashes series, but we're now turning eyes to the series in India in 9 months' time.
But yeah, we're to 2017 Pune. That's where we're. Let's strip our minds back 4 years. Let's get going.
Steve O'Keefe, mate, pleasure as always. Thanks so much for the insight, mate. All the best with the Sixers, you know, BBL, and then the impending call up to the test team.
Yeah, I appreciate it, guys. Well done on 100,000 followers. Keep bringing in that cheddar, boys, and feel free to frivolously hand it out to a few of your guests on occasions if you feel like it. Well, you don't have to, whatever. It doesn't bother me. Cheers.
Not quite the night that I had planned. I'm currently stuck in a lift. Stuck in a lift. The doors won't open. Out of service up there, apparently. Stuck in a lift. Not quite the night that I had planned. Marnus is on the other side. Stuck in a lift. Hello? 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 Not quite the night that I had planned. Stuck in a lift. Just taking a seat. What else do you do when you're stuck in a lift? Hello? Anyone got any suggestions of what I can do? Throw them out there. Let's do it. Throw them out there. Let's do it. Anyone got any suggestions of what I can do? Stuck in a lift. Throw them out there. Let's do it. Marnus is on the other side. Hello? Oh, what do you got? There's some food for me. Stuck in a lift. Throw them out there. Let's do it. What do we got here? A few M&Ms. That's naughty. That'll do. That's naughty. That'll do. That's naughty. Keep me going in here. I need it. Thank you, sir. Throw them out there. Let's do it. It's taking a lift.
Thank you very much to Sock Pairs. We've got to do it before we get into hashtag Ask TGC. Manscaped. Where do you want to start with this? Do you want to just give the top line points, and we'll go into a bit of handiwork that someone sent into us this week?
I think that's exactly right. So I'm not going to, you know, talk about giving your balls a six pack like I did last week. You use the code if you want manscaped gear. Use the code TGC for 20% off plus free shipping, but I think we've got some material that's going to be more interesting to you vis-a-vis understanding the spirit of the Manscaped product. But yes, 20% off plus free shipping using the code TGC at manscaped.com. Your balls will thank you, so says the copy trademark.
Now, this has been sent in from Ed Darby, who wrote in an Ask TGC last week where he'd been doing some work on the slopes in France, and he celebrated Manscaped by putting this together for us.
I distribute mullets with a pube trimmer. I'm heading to France. Hit the slopes with Ed.
Ed Darby.
Sure. Mullet.
Mullet.
With a pube trimmer. Pube trimmer. Mullet. With a pube trimmer. I'm heading to France, hit the slopes with Ed.
Oh, mate, hell of a circuit.
France, with a pube trimmer. Pube trimmer. France, with a pube trimmer. Pube trimmer. The locals at Prey Bar with a pube trimmer. Pube trimmer. Distribute mullets with a pube trimmer. Uncomfortable sounding sex with Ed Darby. Because you wouldn't trim your beard with the same razor that you
use the same
on your penis. Undercarriage. Undercarriage.
manscaped.com. TGC is the code for 20% off. Hashtag ask TGC.
That was thanks to
Pez. Well, thanks to Manscaped.
So that was Ed Darby?
I did say that.
You sent that in? Ah, cool. My brain works.
Hashtag ask TGC, Pez. I hope people are enjoying this week's episode. Are people going to go to the SCG, Pez? Are people going to go to the SCG? Are people going to go to the game to watch the cricket?
Yeah. You just got to take personal responsibility.
All right. Brooke Jordan writes in via Patreon, I should add. Patreon.com/greatcricketer for our dailies of the Ashes for every day of the SCG Test match. Also, India South Africa, patreon.com/greatcricketer. And Brooke has chosen to write in via Patreon as well. Dear boys, you asked for questions about SA vs Ind. So here's a semi-related question about my relationship and ideological cricket conflict therein. So my boyfriend is 10 years older than me, and he's been watching cricket for over a decade, obviously supporting Australia. We started dating last year, and he lured me into this fucked game. I'd never watched cricket in my life and was surprised to find out anyone else did. I'm a severely white Australian woman, but I decided to support India based on their aesthetics, hotness, and power. Besides, the Oz team was full of uggos and seemed boring. A few months after I started vaguely being aware of cricket, my boyfriend and I went to the first and last day of the Oz-Ind Gabba match. This experience confirmed to me that one, my team is god tier, and two, his team is lame, old, and janky as fuck. Don't know what that means. Anyway, this is my first Ashes, and it's boring. It's proper shit, and I still watch it because it's cricket, but it's garbage cricket. I expressed this sentiment to my boyfriend, who understood, but failed to comprehend how objectively dull this Aussie circle jerk is. Since the SA Ind series started, I'm less and less interested in the Ashes. In fact, the Ashes seem like an absolute joke next to this series. Yes, it's only been a single day of play, but it's never too early to make claims of objective fasticity. So that being said, this series is objectively better than the Ashes. Am I right to think that South Africa-India is superior to the Ashes, or do I just have a clinical case of India supporter brain? Or, rather, should my boyfriend be diagnosed with a terminal case of need for safety? Am I a bad girlfriend for hating my boyfriend's team and not supporting them, or just a bad citizen? Thank you, Brooke.
Great question, Brooke. And yeah, a lot of rich stuff in there. I like the perspective that, I mean, so I looked up an uggo on Urban Dictionary. It's just a very ugly person. Yeah. So saying the Australian cricket team is ugly, and that in the Indian team is hot. Have we really passed the Indian side for hotness? There's a few hot boys in there, I guess. Think about your Shubmans, etc.
Well, Shubman's not on the team.
When she's sort of talking about the India Australia series, okay. I'll give you Shubman. Very much in that,
I'll give you Washington Sundar. I'm not giving you much else. Hot.
We're gonna go through. Do you want to go through every Indian player and say hot or not? Oh, I don't.
I've got a few thoughts about these Indian blokes, mate.
I think there's some deep.
I reckon as a matchup, I mean, like, side. Yeah, but I mean, come on, Cummins.
Australia's got a couple.
I mean, is Brooke trying to tell me that Cummins is what am I doing here, Brooke? If that is your real name, or are you just an Indian supporter who's just, you know, changed their name on Patreon?
Yeah, I wouldn't rule that out either. Indian supporter brain is a thing.
Yep.
Australia's supporter brain is a thing too. Every country's got its own supporter brain. What else are we looking at here? The Ashes is boring. Interesting new perspective. It's like, you're just a new person to cricket and you're like, what the fuck's this?
Yeah.
Mate, wait till you see the urn they play for.
I've got to say, when Brooke watches her first Ashes when it's in England and it's the first session is prime time, which is the same as what South Africa, India is for her being in Brisbane. That first ball starts at what, 7? 6 o'clock or some shit. I mean, the Ashes starts for us. The first ball's at 8:30, something like that. 9. So that's prime time, and then you start feeling the things. That's when you start feeling the things.
I look, generally speaking, any kind of national who then supports another nation,
yeah,
is a bit how you
how you going.
Though I'm willing to give this a pass if there's a sort of psychosexual element to this.
Of course.
You know, there's like a deliberate antagonism going on that somehow makes its way into, you know, strengthening and amplifying the sexual relationship.
Yes, yes, yes.
Between both parties. Yes. I'll speak in legal terms now.
Whether that be in the bedroom or a car park. Cadence.
Yes. Precisely what I was thinking. So that I'm interested in that side of things as well. Why have you kind of adopted India there? It seems to be to create some sort of dynamic with your partner, and that may be working. That may be working, and I think that's quite good. Is it bittersweet for his partner? Perhaps his partner should be Brooke's partner should be thankful, because there are also inherent issues with being in a relationship where both people really love cricket. Just full stop. Not that I've ever been in one.
Actually. Is it a bit picking India as your team? Is it a bit like if you watch your first Premier League game and you're like, I'm a Man City fan, are you? Or watching the NBA and you're like, I like the 96 Bulls. I'm sure you do. They're going to win. That team's going to win.
It was the first one she watched and just wanted to piss off her partner.
Yeah, but it's...
It just happened to be India.
They're also playing against Australia, so she's doing it deliberately. It is a... Yes, it is. This is a psychosexual thing, mate, once again, in our DMs.
So it's anti-Australian, but it has psychosexual advantages.
Yep.
Oh.
Next.
Jackson McKinley. Boys, I was watching the Adelaide test recently and I had a thought which I truly believe only the both of you are qualified to answer. As Jimmy Anderson was walking to the back of his mark on the first night, I saw in the background behind him the, inverted commas, Bob Hammond race. This piqued my curiosity because my immediate thought was, in the midst of the brilliant redevelopment of the Adelaide Oval, what has this bloke done wrong to only get a race named after him? I am from Sydney, and for many years now, I have wondered what the point of the Dally Messenger stand even is. Do 500 seats or so even count as a stand? My question to you, therefore, is there an alpha hierarchy to the naming of the grandstands at the ground? What are the determining factors here? Size, direction to the sun, angle to the pitch, height, amenities? Perhaps it is more than just grandstands, as in Adelaide. Are light towers and scoreboards also privy to this hierarchy? And finally, what the fuck is a Brawongle? Loving the show and hope you and your families all have a Merry Christmas. Kind regards, Jackson McKinley.
Talking about legal letters. I would like, if I had a choice of what amenity that I would like named after me, I think I'd like a scoreboard. I would like a scoreboard, yeah. And I would like it to be called the Ian Higgins Memorial Scoreboard, even though I was still alive.
Yeah. Yes.
But, I mean, in terms of alpha hierarchies, if you are the current prime minister of a country and then you just name a brand new stadium after yourself, that's up there with, that's going to be tough to beat, as Narendra Modi has done in Ahmedabad with that. It's actually the biggest stadium in the world, isn't it? It's 100, how big is it? It's 130,000? 120,000?
Yeah, I think 130. Let us know in the comments.
Yeah, that's a lot of people. That's one that opened up last year where England played there. But I mean, have you got a preference of like, would you want a statue like in the grounds? Like, you know, in the SCG where there's Benno, there's Steve Waugh, great statues around there in the back of the members. You know, a bar, Percy Bain's bar.
I want a statue if they're going to make it as big as Richie Beno's one. He's absolutely fucking massive.
Yeah.
You know, just sort of chest for days. You're fucking bronzed for life, looking big. But that's Beno stuff. You can't really get there. Yeah. I mean, just to quickly cover one bit off Jackson, Brawongle is an Aboriginal word meaning camping place. So you're racist and cancelled. Oh, I feel so good virtue signaling that. I was literally looking that up on SMH. No, that's what that means.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, but how many runs did Barongal score?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think there's definitely an alpha hierarchy for all these things that sit outside the main playing group of cricket. Like, I often think about, like how Nugget Rees ascended to being the sort of test match volunteer.
Yeah.
You know, like how many volunteers are kind of competing to get all the way to test status where you can get a blazer and a baggy green and lead them out onto the ground. You know, like there's a lot of economies that sit outside of just the playing 11. Alpha hierarchies everywhere.
Yep.
So in terms of what I would like, yeah, I would like a Benno statue. I'd like people to come up. I'd like people to be touching my bronze chest, which is sort of 1.5 times life size. It's like I went to a zoo once. Yeah. I still don't know the name of this cat, but there was a cat that was somewhere sized between a normal domestic cat and a tiger. And it was the scariest thing I've ever seen because it was just large enough that if you saw it in the street, you'd freak out. But, like, you wouldn't be sure if it was cat or not. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Possibly not. And that's the sort of sized statue that I'd want. Mate. Like, not super big, like, you know, Stalin shit. Yeah. But just at the Benno level, where you go, ooh, you're a fucking big bopper. You're a big bopper.
I want it something where between Benno and, like, you know, you've been to New York, like, you know the Statue of Liberty? Liberty.
Yeah.
Which is next to the Limity, which is what I said. It's actually next to it.
Area 51A.
It's an annex to Area 51. Mail gets sent there all the time tonight, and they're living there.
This is a Statue of Liberty. celebrating statutes of limitations.
That's right. And limitations. But the Statue of Liberty is smaller than what I thought it was. I thought it was going to be. It's actually not that big. Yeah, so I want something in between Benno and Statue of Liberty, like somewhere in between that. Also, have you ever seen a feral cat? They're fucking massive. Yeah, all right. That'll do. I can't believe we've made it this far. I need to lie down and sweat this one out. Hope I feel okay soon. Hope you feel okay soon too, Pez. To you and to yours. Happy New Year, by the way, to everyone.
And to you and to yours.
Happy 2022. Thanks for tuning in as ever. However you're consuming this, find us on Patreon for the dailies or on YouTube. However you consume TGC. See you guys next time. Cheers.